Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Auto Transport Intel. It is Wednesday. It is noon Central Time. That means it's time for DOT compliance with your DOT guy, Brian Riker, where we're going to answer questions. FMCSA regulations, DOT enforcement, scales, IFTA, IRP, ELD, CDL. What's your question? We're going to be live for 30 minutes. Actually, this is going to be a longer show, so stick around. Get comfortable. We have a lot to cover. There was a lot of stuff that I saw when I was digging through emails. Do me a favor. Since we have so much to talk about, you want to help somebody out. Click share. You see below the video. Click share. Click copy. Grab that YouTube link. Email it. Text it. Share it on social media. Send it to a friend. Help them get answers, questions, so they don't get cleaned out at the scales. Right? Okay. And you know, you can go to autotransportintel.com, click on sign up, become an ATI insider, get on the email blast, talk to Ty. We'll put you in touch with our network of experts that can help you get set. By the way, mic check. How's the audio? Is it a little hot? Mic, 1, 2, 3. I think we're okay. I think we're good. And Brian's giving me the high sign. He says yes, he's going to be with us in a moment. Let's go ahead and take a look at the live chat. We've got, okay, Vistaga, and then there's one. What's up? What's going on, Vistaga? Silver Mint, Ahuga. And Carlos Braxton, ACB Logistics. And, I'm late? By what, 30 seconds? Come on. And then Kimberly is here. What's going on, Kimberly, in the live chat? All right, it is now time. It is 2 after, Vistaga, okay? But the good news is that I'm about to transition and bring in Brian. We're going to answer questions. We got a lot of news articles. There is a lot to talk about. And, Vlad's here too. What's up, Vlad? Hey, Jay, when you first start, it plays a commercial. I know. I know. That's YouTube. That's the platform. And what can I do, right? We all got to pay the piper somehow. Okay, speaking of, Brian, can you see me and hear me? Brian's lens froze. I think he was cleaning his lens and it froze. Brian, restart that. His stream broke and he's coming back in. That was Brian's thumb. I think it was something like that. So, Tuber's Transportation. All right. Hey, Brian, can an owner-operator do his own maintenance? Ooh, good question. Let's get to Brian. Brian, how are you doing?
I am well, Jay. I think I got the technical issue fixed. We should be good.
The glitch is fixed. And I know I might sound a little enthusiastic for a Wednesday for DOT compliance, but coming off the Tuesday night show, had a great show last night. So I just want to thank everybody that was there. And if you missed it, Ship Your Car Now live demo was on last night. That was a great show. So, good. I just hogged the microphone. Did you see how I did that? Hey, how are you doing, Brian? Give me that.
It's all good, Jay. It's all crazy. Good.
So, you said it'd be okay if we spent a little extra time today?
Yes, I'm just chilling out in Ontario, California in a hotel right now, so I'm yours.
Nice. That's wonderful. That's what we want to hear. You heard it live. He's ours. So, okay, Two Bears has that question. Let's do that. Let's do a couple questions, then we're going to go into some news stuff. Hey, Brian, can an owner-operator do his own maintenance?
Absolutely, as long as you're competent at what you're doing. There are some minimum qualifications by FMCSA for working on your brake system, but they're not hard to meet. So, absolutely, you can do your own maintenance. Just look up brake inspector qualifications and make sure you meet that so that you can work on your brake system as well.
Okay, thank you for that. Silverman, let's say I'm not over 26,000, but slightly over on my 9990 trailer. What kind of trouble am I looking at?
At best, you'll get an overweight citation for exceeding the weight on the trailer. But what they're going to do is they're going to weigh each of your individual axle groups, your steer axle, the back axle on your truck, and the group axles on your trailer. If all of them fall under, they're not going to break it down and say, oh, well, you've got a little bit too much weight on the trailer. So now, with the exception of California, which looks at things differently for needing a CDL, but generally, the worst you would get is an overweight citation. Most states will just write you and let you go. A couple will make you unload the car.
So we'll do this. I think it is now time to go ahead and show David Betts that you can't stump Brian. I think I bet David, and then he raised my bet by sending me a picture of him on a stump. So that is David. Thank you, David. David is in the live chat. What is going on? We love to do...
How we do it.
So, to answer the question, how we doing, and if you're on the podcast, let's go to camera one for a second. If you're on the podcast, more and more people are listening to the podcast, which is super exciting. And so thank you for listening. And if you're not on it yet, I'll tell you what, I will share the, what you can do is if you want to get on the podcast, it's hosted on Podbean, but actually, and I put the link in the live chat, really you can go to, just go to Google, search Auto Transport Intel podcast. It's everywhere. Apple, Google, Yahoo, Bing, whatever. It's everywhere. So get the podcast. And so here we go. How we doing in the segment? How we doing? What Brian, what's the purpose of how we doing?
So that we can try to educate the folks to keep them from making the mistakes other people are making and bring the whole industry up. Not to cause any grief or pick on anybody. We are truly here to help.
I love that. That's absolutely true. So... how we doing? This got sent in. I want to say Travis sent me this. Okay, so please describe it and describe how we're doing.
So we have a single axle international dump truck that appears to have a car in the body covered with a tarp, flat towing a Toyota pickup truck behind it with the masking tape on the tailgate saying in tow. Well, there's nothing illegal about flat towing a truck as long as they have a properly manufactured hitch and tow bar and safety chains. The in tow is not necessary on the tailgate. It looks like they have a set of magnetic tow lights up on the roof of it. So that makes that legal. Now, the car in the body of the dump truck, I'm not quite sure how they would have that properly secured with all four in all four directions. You are allowed to use a bulkhead for securement. So if they've got the front bumper of that pushed right up against the front of the box, then they have chained pulling forward and something up in the front, it may be legally secured. Is it pretty? Is it conventional? No. But I guarantee you this truck and pickup truck combination is an exporter heading out of the country with it. They're the ones that tend to move their loads that way. There's probably other stuff under that tarp too, because they'll load it up with anything they can buy up here. Now, I don't see a DOT name and number taped to the door. I don't know what type of registration they're using. A lot of these folks will just take a lot sticker off from the auction and put it in the license plate spot and pretend like it's a temporary in transit tag. So there could be legal issues with it, but the actual loading of the car in the dump body, though unconventional, isn't necessarily against the law.
So in summation, how we doing? We're doing okay. We're okay.
Fairly okay. It's a normal occurrence. I don't know why they go through all the work they do to do that, but it is
a lot of work.
Fairly
That's what I was thinking.
Normal occurrence.
That is a heck of a lot of work. What kind of car is that?
I'm not quite sure. That looks like the back end of a Mustang, maybe.
That's what I was thinking.
05 vintage and up Mustang.
So, and by the way, I think what they wrote is in town. In town?
In T-O-W-N. In towing.
Hey. There it is. In That's towing. The name of the company, and those are the letters, In Town Towing. I don't know. It's pretty interesting. It really is fascinating. And again, I think it's helpful to share this because if you're wondering, right, if you see a setup and you're just wondering, snap a photo, send it to autotransportintel@gmail.com. Let's take a look. This is an objective point of view. Better to know now than at the scales. So he'll get through the scales. You think he'll be, you know what I mean, the weigh station or the DOT,
he
wherever.
Will probably bypass the scale.
Right, he buys it, but down the road, a trooper would say, I guess you're okay?
Yes, yeah, the average trooper's not going to pull this over.
The DOT, and I get it
DOT
wrong.
Might to double check his, permits, but it's... Right. Not as bad as some of them I've seen. It's not as bad as chaining three of them together with just tow bars wrapped with chain around the rear bumper.
And in fact, I'll bet $5 nobody stops them, right?
Yeah, you're probably right, because otherwise they wouldn't do it if they kept doing it.
I mean, you know, man, I'm going to waste all day on this guy. Here we go. Here's some news. Car that rolled off a trailer on an I-65 hits Indiana State Police cruiser. Did you hear this?
I have not heard about that one yet.
I dug this up. This is from a month ago, but I was like, okay, we got to talk about this. Because, all right, in Louisville, an Indiana State trooper sitting in his cruiser on I-65, sitting in the median, was hit by a car that rolled off a trailer.
Wow.
That's why we do how we doing. This is literally why we do how we doing. The crash happened
absolutely.
It was 7 a.m. on a Wednesday near a 33-mile marker just north of Scottsburg. We know there's a busy area, and there's the car. It was a black, I don't know what that sedan is, pretty nondescript.
Yep.
Smashed into the cruiser. Now, we're going to stay on this because there's actually more. Here's more pictures of the cruiser. The trooper suffered a broken nose, broken ribs, and other injuries. The trooper was initially treated at the hospital, transferred to another hospital with a possible spinal fracture. The driver from Seymour of the Silverado hauling the flatbed was not injured. From Seymour, driving a Silverado, pulling a flatbed. He did stop at the crash scene, was cited for an insecure load, and released from the scene. The car hit the trooper's vehicle. It didn't roll into oncoming traffic, and that likely saved someone's life. Yeah, this could have been even worse.
Absolutely. And this is why we have to have proper securement, because this stuff does happen. Don't believe it's not going to happen to you. It does happen.
We're going to get to that. Okay, yeah, here's some more. NTSB, okay, then you have the NTSB report. Finds the auto transporter slammed into stop traffic, leading to a deadly wreck. I'm mixing articles, and I don't want to do that. I was putting the show together, and I got some of the slides a little mixed up, I see here. We're going to go on to another story. Are you ready for... This is, And let me make sure I'm ready for this story. This is pretty bad. Before I get to that, okay. Infrastructure bill. You saw the infrastructure? Dang, my slides are all messed up. Did you see the infrastructure bill? I want to talk about that. The bill that passed. Here we go. The Senate passes a $1 trillion infrastructure package with auto safety, EV provisions, but I think truck parking is left out. Brian.
Yes, they did leave truck parking out of it. There's a standalone bill for truck parking. There was a last-minute amendment that tried to fund truck parking that did not get included. There's still a standalone bill, and since truck parking is in the House version, there's still a chance that in the conference committee that takes what the House passed, what the Senate passes, and merges them into one, there's still a chance truck parking will make it. DOT has at least recognized there's an issue with truck parking, so I do believe they're going to go looking for some funding for it.
But the I think the thing that we had talked about, it's got to pass the House and the Senate. It's passed the Senate. Bills pass the House first, right? So this is a done deal?
It's not a done deal
yet. It's not a done deal.
Not a done deal yet. We have two different versions. So now they'll come together in a conference committee where representatives from the House and senators work together to come up with something, mix the language together that is acceptable to both sides. Then both sides go back and vote on that. And then it will be a done deal. So it's a done deal in the Senate up to the point that it's going to be edited when they try to merge it with the House version.
Let's say you're like me and you find all this stuff just a total bedtime story. Is there a takeaway? Is there some kind of cliff notes that I can get?
Cliff note is it's not a done deal yet. House is on recess. So it's going to be the end of August before we know what is going to move forward. Bottom line, has to be done by the end of September. Otherwise, they'll have to pass another Band-Aid to keep funding to our highways.
All right. So I can just change the channel, go back to the game shows.
Yeah, and there's nothing exciting that's going to happen for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
All right, perfect. Thank you very much. I feel much better. Let's talk about the infrastructure bill that would require alcohol monitors for all new cars. Can we talk about this?
I don't like the idea. I understand what they're trying to do, but it's way too invasive, and I don't think it's actually going to go anywhere. That's one of those, Senator, put something in there. It's a feel-good measure. I'm fighting for you. I understand how tragic DUI is, but yeah, it got voted out. It's really just a feel-good thing that they know is not going to go anywhere.
All right. I feel better then. Excellent. Thank you, Brian. How about... pot for truckers. Business Insider is advocating marijuana use for truckers. ATA disagrees. Wait, who's advocating pot for truckers?
That says Business Insider magazine is advocating for marijuana use. What they're really doing, this is another case of one of those sensational headlines. What they're really doing is they wrote a more or less an editorial opinion that we should reconsider whether marijuana belongs on the Schedule 1 list of federally prohibited substances, since more than half the country has made it legal now. And it's disqualifying a lot of otherwise good drivers from their job. Now, I'm not suggesting anybody go out and drive any vehicle when they are stoned. The problem with marijuana is we don't have a reliable intoxication test like we do for alcohol at the moment. So until they can prove whether you're under its effects immediately, then and there, instantly, we will never see marijuana legal for safety sensitive functions. So Business Insider is just trying to make a case to speed up developing an intoxication test in the field. Then we could treat it just like we treat alcohol. Not allowed to use it when you're on duty or just before coming on duty, but outside of that, nobody cares what you do with it.
It's pretty interesting. It's definitely an attention-grabbing headline.
Yes, it is.
Whereas, I don't know if this gets as much attention, an ISS score greatly affects whether or not safety enforcement officer will inspect your truck. I thought I'd hand this to you.
Yes, an ISS score, that's your inspection selection system, that is probably the second most important piece of data used in deciding whether you get inspected or not. This is why it is so important to challenge any incorrectly issued violations, whether you had a citation or not from them. You go to a weigh station, you have an officer write something up that maybe he was incorrect on. It's at least worth trying to fight it through the data queue system. With more and more automated weigh stations and computers assisting the DOT officers, they run your DOT number, they know your ISS score within a half a second, and it's color-coded to make it easy for them. Red, green, yellow. So green is just let them go. Yellow is should inspect. Red is must inspect. If the officer is online using the ISS and comes across a red carrier, then he is supposed to stop and inspect that truck. This is how, when you get the automated lights as you're driving by the scale house on, let's say, I-85 down in Georgia or anywhere else they have them in the country, that's part of how they decide whether you get flagged for a closer look, is they use a camera, read your DOT number. Okay, you've got a fairly good safety record. We'll let you bypass. We're going to focus our limited resources on the carriers that are known to cause problems. So in this particular article or advertisement for PrePass there, they're trying to explain to you how to keep your score low so that if you pay for the PrePass, which are several other way station bypass services as well, you will actually get the most use out of it. So this is very important. The second, outside of the officer noticing an obvious defect, like no working lights or the flat tire they can see, this is the number one way they decide who gets selected when it's not just a random selection.
It's interesting you pointed out, it is an advertisement, but it's more like info marketing, which I feel like info marketing is being underutilized. Most social media now is very just attention grabbing, but light on actual information. Whereas that's why I shared this. This is information and an advertisement. It's both. You can actually have both.
Yes, you can. And PrePass does a pretty good job of not putting fluff out there. They put true factual information. PrePass sponsors a podcast called Eyes on the Road. It is not on a regular schedule, but it pops up. One actually just dropped this morning. It's hosted by Evan Lockridge. He's a very well-respected trucking media journalist. He actually had a radio show on Sirius XM for years, and his wife is the senior editor or publisher, I forget what she is, of Heavy Duty Trucking Magazine, which is a respected publication in the truckload world. And Evan does a great job with his podcast with this infotainment or info advertising, whatever you want to call it, where they present facts that help you make an informed decision so that you can be one of those carriers that doesn't get harassed as often or do things properly.
Awesome. Let's see, because I won't pick on today is international your dog is actually a cat day. All right, there I said it.
Woof, woof.
Yeah, meow. Exactly. Well, that and there is woof, woof. It's international. Okay. Let's go to, speaking of information. Now, I saw this thread, and I'm sharing it. Okay, the question was, after I paid for my DOT and MC number, do I have to wait 21 days before I can start transporting cars, or can I start as soon as possible? And I think this is a really good question, because I think, right, for most new business owners, why do you want to sit around and wait for paperwork to hit the fax machine? You want to get out there and get moving. Is that the case, Brian?
Yes, you must wait until they grant you your operating authority, and it's a minimum of 21 days with an average turnaround of 23 to 25, but I have seen some take as long as 80 or 90 days if there's a problem with your application. This goes back to, and this is an archaic rule, it goes back to the days of granting authority to run specific regions or lanes, back to the old Interstate Commerce Commission days, where you would have to make publication in the newspaper, make an application requesting permission to run a lane to say that you prove there's a public need for a new motor carrier. And then your competition would have a protest period of 21 days, and so would the public, to submit comments as to why ABC Trucking should not be granted operating authority. So they've kept that hold open 21-day period. That's why you start getting those phone calls instantly after you submit your application, because FMCSA publishes this data in the Federal Register, which is the newspaper that has all upcoming new regulations or actions in it. And people have 21 days to come to protest. I could decide I don't like you and don't want you to own a trucking company, and I could write a protest into the FMCSA, and that'll hold your application up until they've investigated it to make sure that the charges are untrue or allegations are untrue or true. So, yes, you must absolutely positively wait until they grant your authority to engage in interstate commerce. Now, that said, that doesn't mean you're dead in the water. Most states, you can engage in intrastate commerce where you nor the freight go out of or come from out of the state or the country without an active MC number. Now, there are a handful of states such as Arizona that will not let you do intrastate while you're in a pending period with your interstate authority either. But in most cases, you can at least run local in-state runs during this 21-day period. This is why when I do authority applications, I walk my customer through this long before we ever apply, because there's a lot of misleading companies out there that promise you to get you your DOT number instantly. I can too. As soon as I fill out the application, before I'm even done filling it out, I know what your number is going to be. But it's not active until they grant it. So I make sure to explain to anyone that comes to me that it's going to take you a month. Figure it's going to take you a month from the time you make the application. So I generally tell you not to bind your insurance policy till day 15 or 17, at least save you 2 weeks of paying for insurance, because that's the other thing. Your authority will never go active until your insurance is paid for and your insurance company has sent proof of insurance to FMCSA. You have your process agent in place and you fully completed your authority application. So we'll jump off a little here. I get guys, I see it all the time. I got my number, I'm going to let it age for 6 months, but they never bothered to get insurance. So the number's not aging. It's just going to go in the inactive file, and you're going to have to pay to file all over again after 90 days if you didn't complete your duties and get insurance on it.
Devin says, hey fellas, can I take my truck and trailer to DOT for inspection before or after I get my authority?
To the DOT as in the scale house? Most states don't take volunteer walk-ins. So if you want to do something like that, find out who your local state police representative is for motor carrier enforcement. Call them and ask them if they do a terminal inspection where they would come to you or you can bring it to them. But most states are not doing that right now. Some that used to, such as Pennsylvania, have stopped citing COVID and manpower shortages as a reason not to do it. That said, the inspection done by a motor carrier enforcement officer does qualify in place of your federal annual inspection you're required to have, but most motor carrier officers are not doing it anymore. Now, if you're in California, you have a very good chance of them coming and doing it at your terminal, because they have a basic inspection of terminals program where they come out anyhow. Even if you don't want them to, they come out and look at your truck in your driveway.
And I think they bring the vaccine with them. That is a joke. okay.
Hey, we're issuing vaccines in North Dakota in scale houses and weigh stations for Canadian truck drivers.
Wait, say that again?
We are in a partnership with the DOT, the state of, I believe it's North Dakota, and the Canadian government administering vaccines in rest areas and weigh stations, and they were targeting predominantly Canadian truck drivers to allow them to continue to cross the border.
Wow.
Yes, that was a program they announced about a month ago.
Wow. All right, well, I'm going to stay out of that one. I said vaccine, I dropped the bomb, everything went crazy. That was the end of the show. That was the last time we heard from Jay. Vistaga says, you can haul hay without numbers and agricultural loads without authority.
Yes, there's a lot of exempt commodities. You could, if you had a tow truck company, you can haul a wrecked or disabled vehicle from its initial point of disablement, generally without operating authority. You may have state licensing requirements, but the feds exempt wrecked and disabled from the primary point of disablement, meaning the side of the highway where the accident or breakdown happened. There are other unprocessed commodities, mostly agricultural. A lot of states, Coal and certain other products like that might be in the exempt list. There's a whole list FMCSA publishes of exempt commodities. And so, yeah, there you can haul stuff, but...
But if, see, in my, for my money, if you're looking at the exemption list, like, oh, the guys that haul hay or whatever, you're just torturing yourself. You don't haul hay. Mm-hmm.
No. Now, if that's the business you want to be in, great. But if you're a car hauler, general freight hauler, there is no getting around in that 1 month period. The best option is, if you already released onto somebody, apply for your authority, pay for your insurance up front, and keep running your lease for a month while your stuff goes active, and then just switch over at the time it goes active. But there really is no shortcut.
Let's do, okay, here we go. Investigation FMCSA needs to improve oversight of CDL qualifications. Now, this is an old photo. This is the, the historic, which crashes? This was, man, this was like
this was the crash. This was the crash in New Hampshire where the hot shotter ran over and killed several motorcyclists. And it turns out he should have been disqualified by his home state of Massachusetts for failing a drug test and a couple other violations. And because Massachusetts wasn't using electronic data interchange with other states, it never caught up from the violations in other states to cause his CDL to be suspended. And this actually resulted in the director of the Registry of Motor Vehicles up there resigning from his position because he was devastated and embarrassed that he hadn't corrected this problem before it happened. So yes, FMCSA needs to improve their oversight of CDL disqualifications, and FMCSA, in an unusual turn of events, took quick action on this, and they are now pushing through regulation to mandate states no longer use paper notifications to each other. There's still a handful of states out there that when we get a violation, it's a form that gets faxed or emailed over to the other state, and someone has to manually input that on their driver record, whereas most states transmit this stuff in near real time electronically. So there you go. I see on slide number two here, the lack of timely notification and the problem with snail mail. And absolutely, it's 2021. It's time that this stuff is done in real time. We've had a database since the 90s to allow for this to happen, but not every state has participated in it.
And there you just said it exactly, because slide three is states doing their own thing. And that was the whole point of this article. I thought it was a good article because it's pointing out the problems that led to, right, and we, you know, what are they, the straw that breaks the camel's back? This was clearly a big, giant straw.
Sure.
Which, okay, then that leads to, okay. Lawsuit filed and fatal 12-vehicle Interstate 65 pileup in Butler County. Do you know about this?
I'm somewhat familiar with it, yes.
I mean, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but meaning, okay, let me ask you this. Do you know about this crash? Have you heard about this crash?
Yes, I've heard about this crash.
And did you know that there's two trucks involved, and one of them is a large auto transport business?
And yes, a well-known one.
Right, exactly. And so, and I didn't blur out the name of the company, and this is public information. And I'm not here to pick on, again, this is not camera one. This is not. We're not here to pick on any one thing or person or company. We're talking about things that are happening. We can't stop. You can't stop speeders. People are going to speed. People are going to drink. People are going to drive crazy. There's going to be pot for truckers and all this stuff. Can't stop it. But we do need to talk about some of the really big moments. This is a big one because I'm just going to read. Okay, so the Montgomery-based Beasley Allen Law Firm, and it's the law firm that's going to pull every hair out that can be found, says it filed a lawsuit on behalf of the driver of a Tallapoosa County Girls Ranch van. Worst case scenario. The driver was seriously injured, and the families of five children who died in the van. The defendants in this case were negligent and displayed a complete disregard for the lives of fellow travelers around them. said the lawyer. As a result, 10 people died that day, including 8 children who were trapped in a van driven by our client. Now, the NTSB has released a preliminary report on the wreck. The NTSB says traffic was slow, even stopped on I-65 northbound near Pigeon Creek Bridge on the afternoon of Saturday, June 19th. It says a tractor-trailer truck hit an SUV, which had 4 people inside. Then it hit the van, which had 9 people inside and other vehicles that were in traffic. To go through, to sit on the jury box and watch the play-by-play of the whole accident, sounds like it was insane. 2 people in the SUV were killed, as were 8 people in the van. So that's at least 2 vehicles, but then I think it says it goes on to hit other vehicles. Or maybe those vehicles hit other vehicles. It reminds me of those terrible ice wrecks you see, where just cars keep smashing. The lawsuit states a truck and trailer owned and operated by large auto transport business hit the SUV. The suit says then an 18-wheeler, it wasn't just them, then an 18-wheeler comes in and adds insult to injury, hits the van. The driver of that truck is named in a lawsuit. So 2 trucks, based on what we just read and what we know, Brian, what do we think was happening? How do we look at this objectively? What is going on here?
Well, obviously, the tractor-trailer drivers failed to reduce speed to avoid a collision. That's a given. If they hit stopped or slow-moving traffic, they were driving too fast for the road conditions for the traffic that was there. I'm not sure what type of advance warning there may have been for the stopped or slowed traffic on I-65. But from what I understand, this was near a work zone. So there was traffic in queue, so I'm sure there was advanced warning. Whether it was properly deployed advanced warning, I don't know. I can only speculate that the drivers were not looking far enough in advance, using proper eye lead time and paying attention. But what we have is a tragedy where we had some drivers that crashed into some stopped or slowed traffic. This is why Congress is pushing for automatic emergency braking on commercial vehicles, because these type of crashes are becoming all too common, not just with commercial motor vehicles, but with motor vehicles in general, as we are distracted by things around us, technology in the cab, a cell phone in our hand. I find some of the systems built into these brand new vehicles that are approved to be in the vehicle very distracting. So what we have is a completely avoidable tragic loss of life had the 2 vehicles involved, the 2 large commercial vehicles involved, been able to stop in time and recognize there was a hazard up ahead.
Yeah, I'm staring and, you know, we're not trying to, there's speculation and observation everywhere. So no one's going to come asking us our, you know, what we think. This show will never be played in a courtroom. Okay.
Well, I have to be careful how I answer that, because I do work in that field.
Yeah. So. Right. Well, and that's where I appreciate, just for the sake of, you know, in case this is played in a courtroom, this show is based on our understanding and opinions that are expressed, and views that of personally expressed views and, you know, lawyer language and stuff like that.
I'm going off of the publicly available information and a 30-second review of it.
Exactly.
And it appears that CMV 1 and 2 failed to reduce speed to avoid a collision, which is a generic catch-all phrase used on accident investigation reports anyhow.
Well, and that's that is my personal opinion based on what I've absorbed and consumed, which is by no means an expert opinion. But it seems as if, yes, the truck and trailer did not realize until it was too late that they were going to careen into vehicles, and therefore the truck and trailer behind him was just following his lead. Again, probably not offering enough stopping distance, which people, that I don't know why. I'm going to go to camera one. I don't know why people don't put stopping distance in front of their vehicles. I really don't know. I know they learned about it on the DMV test, but I guess it's just, it's an annoyance, it's an irritation, and darn it, we're not going to do it.
I know they learn about it at these large motor carriers as well. The car hauler involved in this, they have a defensive driving program that's part of their orientation. The training is there. And this is a very unfortunate location for the crash, because if you look, they just came off of a bridge. So by the time you realize you're not going to stop, you don't even have the choice to just run off the road to avoid everybody, because there's a bridge abutment there you can't physically drive through. If the stop traffic was 100 yards further north, then that tractor trailer very reasonably could have just drove down in the median, and he may have been the only injured party in the crash. He or she may have been the only injured party in the crash. It's a bunch of unfortunate chain of events that led to this tragic crash.
It's interesting that you point that out, because it kind of looks like that second truck and trailer was trying to use the median.
It looks like there's debris field going on to the bridge, but I think he might have tried to dive to the median as quickly as he could to lessen his impact into the crash scene.
But there were vehicles there now, because, yeah, right?
Yes.
The CMV-1 brought vehicles into the median, and therefore there was just no way to...
Nowhere to go.
And right, because there is the opposing traffic. Anyways, I'm gonna share a few more things, because we're here. Okay, this was so the NTSB, this is the deadly I-65 wreck. And the crash that killed 10 people, including 9 children, on I-65 near Greenville in June occurred when an auto transport truck slammed into vehicles that were stopped on the roadway. This report says they were stopped. Now, this is a news article of the report. I also have the report.
Stopped after a series of minor crashes. So it wasn't a work zone then, so there was no real advanced warning that there was stopped traffic.
Right, and I didn't see any cones or nothing, although it was an overview, but yeah. Right, so yeah, no... Now, and let's talk about the weather, because obviously the weather's going to be brought up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's read this. So, now it was a 2020 Volvo tractor trailer pulling a 2020 Cottrell transport trailer traveling north, right lane, I-65. The traffic, including the van and the SUV, had slowed to a stop following a series of minor crashes. The NTSB reported light rain was falling at the time of the crash, and that a series of rain bands had come through the area during that day.
Mm-hmm. Well, rain is something that anyone that travels down south understands leads to an excess amount of crashes. The hot asphalt, you get a little rain on it, the asphalt gets slippery. So when there's a light rain, it is quite dangerous to be driving. So that calls for an even greater following distance and greater attention to detail ahead. That car hauler looked empty. An empty truck stops in a longer distance than a loaded truck. It sounds counterintuitive, but the way the brakes work, you don't get as good performance out of them when you're empty versus loaded on a lot of vehicles. So it was a recipe for disaster there, with a slightly wet road and traffic stopped from an unexpected series of crashes in front of you.
Plus the bridge, plus, I mean, I'm speculating distracted driving. I'm going to speculate that, just because it doesn't seem that there was enough knowledge in time.
Well,
doesn't the amount of death kind of indicate the severity of the crash?
Absolutely. It would indicate to me that the tractor trailers crashed into stop traffic at near highway speed. And this is why, as much as drivers dislike them, cameras that face outward and inward are important because you as a motor carrier have a responsibility to the public to make sure your drivers are doing what we pay them to do. And I'm not saying we use the cameras as nanny babysitting technology, but we use them to coach our drivers and maybe identify some questionable driving habits before something like this happens so that you can make your driver a better driver. Or in this event, maybe there's something else that we don't know that camera footage would have been able to exonerate the driver from being at fault for this.
Listen to this. After striking the van and other cued vehicles, the truck, which I believe is the second truck, struck the left bridge rail and continued into the median beyond the north end of the bridge, coming to rest with a portion of its trailer in the roadway. The Ford Explorer, after being hit by the transport truck, overturned and struck several other stopped cars. That takes a lot of force.
Reading that, it sounds like the collision started somewhere still on the bridge, not in the clearing where we had seen in the overhead.
And then a fire broke out. I mean, man. Now, why spend so much time on this?
I went to mute again, Jay.
Yeah, okay, good. Oh, you did? Now I can hear you. Let's do this. Preliminary highway report. Now that this is the official report, which you can read, you can Google it, you can find it. Let's see.
I'm good now.
Traffic north of the bridge has slowed and stopped. And I just want to say this. We're going to stay here. We're going to stay on this for a few more minutes because I do believe that if you, let's say you're driving and you're listening to the podcast, hopefully maybe for somebody that has a moment of maybe you're tired or something and you think this is the worst case scenario that can happen if I'm not careful. I need to pull over. I need to walk around the truck. I need to do something, and then I need to come up with a strategy to get off the road.
Correct. Right. If you're tired, if you're not in the right frame of mind for doing your job, let's just say you had an argument with your spouse or a friend or a dispatcher or whatever. If you're not in the right frame of mind, either tired or distracted, then you don't belong behind the wheel of any vehicle until you can correct that situation. No load, no performance bonus, no service failure report is worth killing yourself or somebody else over.
So let's go to the report and then we'll wrap this stuff up. Traffic north of the bridge had slowed and stopped, forming a queue due to a series of minor crashes. As it encountered the traffic queue, first truck struck a 2020 Ford Explorer, which was occupied by a driver and three passengers. After this initial impact, they veered to the left, striking a Ford F-350 Transit van occupied by a driver and nine passengers. After striking the van, which then hit other vehicles, struck the left bridge rail. Okay, so it initially happened on the bridge.
Okay.
Ford Explorer, then F-350, then bridge rail, and continued into the median beyond the north end of the bridge, coming to rest with a portion of its trailer in the roadway. As a result, the SUV overturned and struck other vehicles. Following this series of collisions, now a 2005 Freightliner, 2009 Wabash dry trailer, came upon the stopped vehicles, veered left, struck and mounted the left bridge rail, struck the van, came to rest in the median. And then a fire ensued. In total, 12 vehicles, 38 vehicle occupants involved in this crash.
I will tell you, crashes crazy like this have become too common, and I get very nervous when I'm stopped in traffic queue because I don't trust the people behind me to be able to come to a stop anymore.
Isn't that weird when you are, you're fearing, that's from last night. I did that last night too. I was doing my show last night and I apologize for breaking the mise en scène. where I put up the wrong graphics, but it's when you are when you're driving and you're worried about the person behind you. Isn't that a weird feeling? Like, what, they're behind me and I'm worried about it.
And well, you have to manage the space all around your vehicle when you're driving, but when you're stopped, you're sitting duck because you have nowhere to go when that person can't stop behind you.
So, okay, happy times. Great show, Jay. Let's do this. Oh, yeah, here we go. That makes sense. Let's talk about what is this? Is this next week? Wait, let me share the screen here. There we go. Brake Safety Week set for August 22nd through 28th.
Yes. For those of you with air brake, make sure your automatic slack adjusters are working properly and your brakes are in adjustment. An easy way to do that, if your automatic slack adjusters work properly, is 6 or 7 good, firm, full applications of your brake pedal with your air system fully charged and your parking brakes released in the morning before you go anywhere. For those of you with hydraulic and electric or electric over hydraulic brakes on your trailer, they're going to be looking for adjustment and they're going to be checking your breakaway brake system. So now is a good time to double check your breakaway brake system. Pull the pin so it activates, and if the truck moves when you step on the throttle, you have a problem with the system. Get it fixed, because brakes out of service are one of the top violations CVS finds year-round, and this is going to be a focus on brake systems. So they'll be looking for cracked rotors or drums, brakes out of adjustment, bad shoes or pads, breakaways not working, parking brakes not working, warning buzzers and lights on air brake systems not working, ABS indicator lights that indicate a problem or do not illuminate when you cycle the key. These are all things they'll be looking for the week of the 22nd to 28th.
Thank you, Brian. And thank you, Brian, for with the length of this show. This was longer than normal. Although I think we've had a few that have gone almost this long, but I knew this would be longer because I knew we had the many things to go through. I think I got through all the news articles. And I believe we properly touched upon everything. As I like to say on Tuesday Nights Live, any final thoughts?
It's very dangerous out there. We need to be safe as drivers. Distracted driving kills. I was at the Tow Expo in Texas last week, and that's a hot topic for us down there. There have been 37 roadside workers, that's towers, police, fire, DOT workers, that have been struck and killed so far this year, and mostly due to distracted drivers. And look around yourself. See how many people are playing with their phones or something other than driving. Don't be one of them. It can prevent tragedies like the one we just covered. Just be safe, be compliant. And that's about all I have today.
So on that roadside, struck and killed, how many are struck and injured versus struck and killed? Is there a statistic on this?
I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it's a lot more than are struck and killed.
That's what I would think. Yep.
Yes. Probably double at least. There's work zone injury daily where people are struck by passing vehicles. And
you know, those crosses that people put on sometimes on the sides of the roads, those get my attention. Maybe that should be the first cone in the right? Maybe you could have a cross shaped cone. Boy, I can't imagine
we need something.
Idea.
Right. Yes. Exactly. We need something to compel people to pay attention. We all have a business to run. We have a life to live. But when you're behind the wheel of your truck or your car, just be driving.
Mm-hmm. Let's do this. I just want to say, Brian, we had some folks in the live chat saying hello and contributing thoughts. And I want to thank everybody. Rob, BM, Candy, Kian Tuck, what's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for saying hello and chiming in on a DOT compliance. It's a somber DOT compliance. But pretty serious stuff.
Yes, it is. But it's very relevant.
I know.
It is relevant because qualified drivers, competent, properly trained drivers is a compliance issue. And this is one spot where compliance does equate to safety. If we have drivers with the skill set they need to be commercial drivers, they're much less likely to have these type of horrific, tragic crashes.
Well, and, you know, I mean, who knows what that driver was going through at the time. I'm sure that is, for that driver, a contributing factor. So,
sure.
But all those family members, and it's a pretty wild story. So I want to thank everybody for taking the time to join us today. If you caught this live, or you watch it on demand, or you listen to the podcast, thank you for doing so. Please do remember to send in autotransportintel@gmail.com. Send me stuff that you think should be included in the show. And for Brian, if you've got a question for Brian, onair@yourdotguy.com. Send him an email. That's the fastest way to get an answer. Because we know when we're looking for DOT answers, we need them fast.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do. So, all right, Brian, thank you so much for your extra time today and your contribution. And I hope you have a great rest of your day. And
thank you, Jay. You as well.
Right on. And I will see you next week. We might have a couple guests next week. I'll keep you posted. We'll see how that evolves, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, let me know what actually happens. That way I'm prepared. Thank you, dude.
Okay, cool. You got it, man. All right, take care, Brian. Thank you.
Bye.
All right, see ya.